Hello, you are listening to Dear Talk. I am Mini Mix.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we talk to the king and queen of Australian geocaching, Macamob. We find out what was the best cache in Tasmania, and we do a bit of a quick poll to find out what you think of micros. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to the ninth episode of GeoTalk. It's good to have you along, particularly if you're a returning listener. If you're just new to the show, welcome aboard. I'm your host, Darren Osborne, also known as Spindoc Bob, and based in Sydney. Now, I'm looking forward to this weekend because I'm getting together again with Web Guy and Wingnut, and this time we're going to head into the Blue Mountains and do two fairly extreme-type caches. One is just a little bit of a hard slog up atop of a mountain, but the second one, anyone who's been to this one will know what I'm talking about, is called Daylight, and it's down an abandoned coal mine. So that should be a bit of fun. We'll take the video camera along with us and hopefully get some footage, which you'll see over the next couple of weeks. Last weekend, I went down to the Illawarra South Coast geocaching event, and it was great to see so many geocachers, particularly locals. It was the first time that a geocaching event had been held down near Wollongong, and there certainly has been an explosion in the number of geocachers over the last year or two. And while I was down there, I decided to head down to Jervis Bay for the first time. I've never been down that area, and had a look at some of the geocaches along there, and it's really nice to be able to stop on the side of the road or pull off a little bit and head to the coast in some of those points and look out over the Pacific Ocean. Really is a great way of getting around the country. Now, this weekend is also the Canberra Cache of the Year event, and unfortunately I can't get down there this weekend, but I know the S's have put a lot of effort planning this event, and they wanted me to mention Yerkowitz Camping Store, which is down in Canberra, one of the bigger camping stores down there, who have actually contributed a prize to the Cache of the Year, and they've offered to do it on an ongoing basis. So the S's have asked me to mention that anyone who is interested in geocaching and particularly needs camping gear to drop by them. Actually, turns out that the first GPS that I used, I actually hired from that store. I think I hired it twice, so over 2 weeks, and that's how I got hooked into geocaching. So maybe some of the other camping stores around the country and maybe even some of the GPS stores might be able to get behind some of the locals at some of their future events, he's hoping. And before we get into the geocacher profile, it's time for the trivia question. Now, it's a two-parter. The first one is, which geocache is the most furthest from the coast? Another way of putting that would be, which geocache is closest to the geographic centre of Australia? And which cache is the furthest above sea level? And I'll give you those answers at the end of the podcast. Well, here I am joined by Geocaching Australia's royalty, the king and queen of geocaching. They're blushing right now. I shouldn't say that. I'm joined by Mary and David, who are Team Macamob. How are you both?
I'm very well, thanks, Darren. Good to be here.
Wonderful, thanks, Darren.
Now, you're in Sydney doing a few geocaches. How long have you been geocaching for?
We started in April, nearly 5 years ago, and we've been just going steadily ever since.
At the moment, you hold the record for the most number of caches by an Australian geocaching team. How have you come about finding so many?
Well, we're not into speed or chasing daily or monthly records. We just have been fortunate to have a lot of spare time, and we've always enjoyed driving around the countryside looking at the sites. So now we have an added incentive to do just that. So we just plod along, and if we're in an area and we find some caches, they just build up steadily.
And who discovered geocaching and how did you come about finding out about the sport?
We'd actually read some articles about it. David, as an engineer, had come across some of the literature and he knew all about the workings of it. And from that time, it's developed into our hobby, sport, craze, addiction. But it was our eldest daughter, Alison, who goes under the name of Smurf, with Slider and Smurf. Her husband brought back a GPS from the States. This was the end of 2001. And our second daughter, Joanna, who goes by the name Geojo, she went over there for a holiday, and Alison had told her about it and said, well, come and try it out. Don't buy one yet. See what you think. So she went over, having bought one, had a great time. And then David went and visited her and saw the leaflet, the literature. And from then it was history. They went out together. And then the two girls decided that I wouldn't like it, that I'd, well, Mum could go shopping or sit in the car. And then we went out, and it was just so much fun, and it was, we were just hooked from that first cache.
What would you say is the one of the, or what are the best aspects of geocaching from your perspective?
Well, we like the caches that have some scenic attraction or a bit of history attached. So, yeah, we just enjoy the places that caching takes us to, and there have been some fairly spectacular ones.
Are there any that come to mind?
Just on top of the mountains in Victoria's high country, or, you know, beautiful beaches or waterfalls. There have been quite a few over the years. I wouldn't try to put sort of one at the top. They're just all enjoyable.
And what's been the most memorable moment for you, Mary?
I think with caching, it's the people. Wherever we go, we often come across somebody standing, circling a tree, or because we go to Adelaide a lot, we've made close friends there, or even when our son was married, he had his wedding as an event, like the couple in Sydney. So that was tremendous fun, and there were lots of caches as guests, and several others turned up at the church. But I think the events are wonderful, that you have people of all ages and stages. In Melbourne, we're celebrating Embi's baby, and I think something like that. Our daughter in Seattle, when her baby was born, there were some congratulatory messages from everybody. So it's certainly the people.
I think Mary's right. We really do enjoy the events. We've been to events in South Australia. We make a point of going to their mid-year event as every year. We've been to quite a few events in Victoria. We've been to one up here in Sydney some years ago now. And yes, we always enjoy that, and meeting the other teams that whose caches we find, and talking to the people who have found ours and exchanging stories. It's been that's a good part of the exercise.
Now, in all that geocaching that you've done and find, you mentioned you bump into geocaches, but muggles, any experiences that stand out or any stories that you've had to use or concoct to sort of cover up what you're doing?
I think when we were in Bendigo, there was a cache in one of the old goldfield areas, and we were heading into Ground Zero, and a couple came past and said, oh, what are you doing? And we said we were examining the various wattles, and they laughed hysterically and said, no, I think we know what you're doing. Or that time in Mount Gambier, somebody came up to you and said, are you looking for something? And you said, no, I've already found it. And then, of course, you get to meet them.
Has all your geocaching been in Australia, or have you found caches overseas?
We have done some overseas caches. Usually, when we've been over there for a holiday, we wouldn't go overseas just to find caches. But it would be nice. But we've had some holidays through Europe, so we've found a few caches in Italy. We've done Scotland and England. We even found a cache in Estonia because we had some friends there, and one in St. Petersburg in Russia. A few in Finland. And then just in our last holiday, when we went to see our daughter and son-in-law in Seattle, we did quite a few around the west side of the US and up into Canada, and a few in Alaska because we had a holiday up there before we went to see them.
And down to Portland, Oregon, to see the very first one. And we also organised a trip to Groundspeak too, and met the boys.
So just a few countries. a near small collection.
Not as many as some, but enough.
In Australia, do you find that there are particular trends in different parts of the country? Are there sort of more puzzles or more multis or any that are more difficult in a certain part of the country?
I would have said that on average the difficulty of caches in Sydney, for example, is probably a bit higher than in Melbourne. But it's you can't generalise like that because they're in pockets. Bendigo is a classic case in point. The average difficulty in Bendigo, I think, is considerably higher than elsewhere in Victoria because there have been a relatively small number of teams there that have been, if you like, following each other's trends, and the trend there has been for very cleverly concealed, custom-made containers, sometimes in the most outrageously public of places, and yet they survive because they're so well done. And I think Bendigo is unique in that respect, and I think there are probably pockets like that all around the country.
I think once you get to know a caching team, I'm thinking of Fredo over in South Australia, in Adelaide, and some of his have such involved stories, and that is, you read about that, and that's part of the adventure before you even arrive.
Is there anything that you've seen in the last couple of years in geocaching, that any changes that you think are for the good or for worse in the sport?
I think there's probably several answers to that. The number of caching teams and the number of caches that are appearing is obviously accelerating as more and more people come into the sport. That's, I think, a good thing. But I think the interest factor in a lot of the newer caches seems to be declining. I think when we started, most caches took you to a place of some interest, you know, whether it be scenic or historic or architectural or a particularly clever place to hide a cache or a clever container or something like that. But there are a lot of what I would say are fairly basic, ordinary caches in areas that don't have a lot going for them at the moment.
Mary, I'll ask you this question. Do you think that the growth in geocaching with more participants in it is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. Surprisingly, some of the caches that started about the time we did have dropped out. So whether they'll come back again or it was just a short hobby and they didn't like it, which is hard to understand.
Now, currently, David, you're retired, but Mary, you're still working. What plans do you have? Obviously, you'll be retirement plans coming along in the near future. Do you look at doing more geocaching?
Yes, please.
And what do you hope to say? Do you have any resolutions for this year, any goals for 2007?
No, just to keep enjoying our caching experience.
Absolutely, yes. More caches.
Well, on behalf of everyone listening, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Now, I met up with David and Mary a couple of weeks ago when they dropped into Sydney and shared a cup of coffee and had a chat with them. And they are a fantastic couple. It's no surprise after meeting them to see the number of messages in the forums congratulating them on their 4,000 finds. And if you ever get the chance to cross paths with them, do so and spend some time. They really are a great couple to chat with. They're very down to earth. And I wish them all the best in maybe getting towards that 5,000th cage mark before Dax Emu Mob gets there. Okay, joining me on the line now is Craig from Craig Rat. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Darren.
Now, I understand that you recently had the Tasmania Cache of the Year Awards. Can you tell us, first of all, who won the best traditional cache?
That actually went to myself for my cache, The Cube, which I was pretty stoked about.
And is there anything that you can tell us that was unique about that cache?
It's just we've got a round in a very, very remote part of the northeast of the state. There's a great big granite monolith sitting on top of a hill that not many people know about, and yeah, it's quite a unique little location. And yeah, it was good fun to place it, let alone walk to it. So yeah, really happy with the results on that one.
Sounds like a case that I might have to try out when I'm down there. Now, the next one that you awarded was the best multi-cache. Who won that one?
The DDTs in Hobart for their cache, Taz Exasperation. That won by a very long streak. Everyone who's done that appears to have enjoyed that very much.
Now, is there anything unique that you can tell us about that cache?
Not a lot I'd like to reveal. I actually haven't done it myself, but I know a fair bit about it. But yes, part of its uniqueness is what you find when you get there. So.
Now, the next award was for Best Other Cache. Can you tell us who won that one?
This one won by a very long streak. This was Beige Beard's Treasure by Rapid Supreme down in Hobart. And, yes, it got pretty well rave reviews, and a lot of people have appeared to really, really enjoy that one.
So was that a puzzle cache?
It's a puzzle, yeah, it's a puzzle cache. It's ended everyone who's done it, almost without exception, has given it a vote.
So the next award we've got here is for Best Series Cache. Who took out that one?
Okay, the Cheesy Pigs for their Ghost Tour of Hobart, which I have done, and yeah, that was absolutely fantastic. Has to be done in the dead of night, and it's four waypoints and a final cache, and yeah, that's brilliant.
And the final award that you gave out was for Best Overall Cache. Who won that one?
And Best Overall went to... It went to Rapid Supreme for Beige Beard's Treasure. Again, that won by a very large margin.
Now, you seem to be having a lot more geocaches and geocache participants in the Apple Isle. What's the story? What do you think is the reason behind the growth in geocaching down in Tasmania?
I don't know. I wish I knew, but yes, it's exploded down here. It's gone through the roof, and we've got some new players this year who are very, very keen. Crazily keen, some of them, but yes, we've had a serious Taz down here who's pulled over 515 cases in about 8 months. So he's, yeah, there's only about 600 cases in the state, so very impressive.
So where are most of the geocaches located in Tasmania?
We've got a fair few in Hobart. Majority of them would be down in Hobart, but Ulverston up in the north of the state, our most prolific cache, Rob Taz, has placed probably a good 60 or 70 within probably about 50k of Ulverston, and he's planted about 100 around the state. But yeah, so for the north of the state, Ulverston is the caching mecca, and Hobart's got a lot more multis, whereas in the north of the state they tend to be more easier drive-bys in general.
So that fits in with that north-south rivalry that you have within the state.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, they like their prickles down south too.
Okay, well, look, thanks very much for letting us know the results and giving us a little bit of a taste of Tasmanian geocaching. And if you want to find out more about those caches that won, I'll include those links on the website. Thanks very much, Craig.
No problems, anytime.
Hi, I'm Darren.
And I'm Robin from Just a Trifle.
And all you southerners need to come to Queensland and do some geocaching.
One of the great things about geocaching is that there aren't really any rules. Now, there are guidelines, but the rules are fairly open and we can do within certain limits what we like. And that's a great thing. So when it comes to placing caches, some people place caches that other people may not like, and that certainly happened to even myself. One of the things that I've noticed over the last couple of months, and I don't think I'm alone, are the number of micro caches that are starting to appear. Now, I'm not going to get on a soapbox and condemn micro caches, because there certainly is a place for them, and I've even hidden a few myself. But I thought what I'd do is open up a little bit of a discussion amongst all you listeners to have a bit of a think about what you think about microcaches. And I'll start a posting on the Geocaching Australia forum, and you can go to that at forum.geocaching.com.au. But what I thought I'd do to start it all off is I took my microphone to the Illawarra South Coast event last week and asked the very question, what do you think of microcaches?
Way too many of them. I love the big ones. Bring them on big.
Microcaches?
Bring them big.
Yeah, bring them on big. I don't like micros.
Too hard to find.
As long as they're not the mini micros. Normal micros are fine.
What do you think of micros?
I have a great deal of trouble actually finding most of the caches. So I don't like micros. Yeah. Regular, fine, but not micros.
Micro caches, what do you think of them?
They're small and hard to find.
What would you rather find, a normal sized one or a micro?
Micro.
Like a micro. What do you think of micro caches?
They're harder to find than regular caches are, but they're worth the effort.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Do you like looking for them or do you avoid them?
Micro caches are good if there's a good reason to be there.
I hate them. They're just hard to find.
Bring on an ammo can any day?
Yep.
What do you think of micro caches?
Small part of geocaching.
Do you avoid them?
No. They serve their purpose. Mm-hmm.
What do you think of them?
I find them interesting to find because they're so small, but tend to look for something that we can swap, like the coins or the travel bugs, which you can't do with the micros.
They have their place. In some spots they're good, some spots they're a waste of time.
Do you think they're overdone?
Again, in the right place they're good. Put them in the bush and they're a waste of time.
What do you think of micro caches?
Well, I think that if Tangles was here, he would suggest that they're nice with a cup of hot cocoa.
What do you think of micro caches?
The clever ones I like, the boring ones I don't.
Do you think there are too many micro caches?
There seems to be more and more micro caches going out, and they seem to be a bit of a cop-out for where you can put a traditional size, decent size cache. I think people are just going the route of, hey, it's cheap, I can get a cache out, I can get my cache count up. No, there's just too many of them out there. They've got a time and a place, but not everywhere.
My name is Buck Henry, and I live in Potter's Gulch, and I got a complaint. I found your podcast on the internet, and I want to lodge a complaint because you geocachers are putting those cachers down by the road near my house, and I'm sick of all those film canisters sitting down there by the road, and if someone doesn't come and pick up those film canisters and get them the hell off of my road, I'm gonna whip me some. Cause I'm just not happy about the kind of stuff that you geocachers keep doing around my property. Now I know it's public land down there, and that's when I contacted that other site, that geocaching.com site, and they said, well, you know, it's public land, and then they contacted the authorities, and they said it was okay, and but it's, you know, that borders on my land, and I'm not happy about it. And I don't know why any grown man or woman would want to go along and look at film canisters by the roadside. It just doesn't make sense to a normal human being, and if it's not stopped soon, I'm going to come down there with my baseball bat and a bottle of Jim Beam, and I'm going to whoop me some. I'm telling you, you need to stop it. All right, I hope you'll tell all the people listening to your podcast that they better not come near my property in Potter's Gulch. And okay, so you tell them. Thank you. Bye.
Congratulations, you've found it, intentionally or not. Maine Podcast, the audio companion to MaineGeocachingAssociation.com, is available free on iTunes or at the website. Your hosts, Katahdin Goddess and Khaki, will show you how to enjoy geocaching just like a real maniac, yeah? To send an audio shout-out to anyone in Maine, just leave a message at 207-212-2071. This is Monty Wolf, the Doctor of Rockology, for the Maine Podcast. Live, breathe, cache. Hey-ya.
Okay, now it's time to go into the GeoTalk mailbag. thank you very much to all the emails in response to my question about disabled caching or wheelchair geocaching. I've had a number of responses, and already two people have gotten back to me, and I'm going to be getting in touch with them in the next week or so to have a chat with them, and that will feature in a future GeoTalk episode. So thank you very much for that. Still looking for anyone who's into waymarking. I know there are a couple of you out there who do geocaching and waymarking. I've noticed that the number of waymarks in Australia are slowly starting to increase, and I'd be interested to find out if you've done it, what you think of it, and whether you think there's a future for it as a sort of sport that goes side by side with geocaching. I had a question from the United States. In fact, I was asked this twice, once by Sunny from Podcacher over in San Diego, and also from Captain Jack Sparrow, also known as Pat, over in Portland, Oregon. They wanted to know what the ACT is, because I mentioned it a couple of times, or have in previous episodes. ACT stands for the Australian Capital Territory, which, if you're from outside Australia, it's one of the two mainland territories that are here. We have six states and two territories. The Australian Capital Territory, which is for the capital city of Canberra, so it's very much like Washington, D.C. And there's the Northern Territory, which is up, obviously, in the northern part. It includes Alice Springs, Uluru and Darwin. So thank you very much for that question. Meredith, also known as Sock, sent me an email sort of expressing her disappointment about not being able to post podcaches. Now, I just wanted to clarify one thing. I didn't submit my proposal for a podcache to the Australian approvers or to any approvers at all, because I didn't want to, in a sense, put pressure on iRiblet or on the UMP, who are Australian approvers here. Basically, because it's what I'd seen is happening in the United States, I thought that it was probably best to err on the side of caution. Now, having said that, I think if you keep your ears open over the next couple of weeks, you might hear an announcement somewhere along the lines of podcaches and where you might be able to put them. I won't say any more than that. I should also mention that I got an email from Carolyn, who's organising the Aussie GeoCoin for 2007. You might have seen the 2006 version, which was put together by Adikesh, and I spoke to Adikesh or Darren last episode. Carolyn is organising this year's, and she's currently taking Australian-only orders, and you can check out on the forums. I'll give you a link to where there's some information and a website that she set up there for taking orders. And finally, a big thank you to Ben up in the Hunter Valley, also known as Mix, and his son Mini Mix. Mini Mix for contributing at the start of the program, and also Mix for organizing our good friend Buck Henry to call in during the program. Thanks very much for that. Don't forget, if you'd like to contribute to the program, whether it's with some audio, or even if you've got a bit of video that you just want to take the audio from, whether you have an email or a letter that you want me to read out, please give me an email, drop a line at geotalk@macmac.com, or visit the website at www.geotalk.libsyn.com. And before I go, you need the answer, of course, to the GeoTalk trivia question. And in this episode, it was a two-part. And the first part was, which geocache is closest to the geographic centre of Australia? And the answer to that one is Geocentrical by Ockie's Mates. And that's located about 100 metres away from the actual centre of Australia. Although if you read through the description, you'll find that they had a bit of difficulty locating where the exact point was. And the highest above sea level, it used to be one called Australia's Highest, which was one of the very first geocaches hidden in Australia. But in 2005, it was surpassed by Kosciuszko's Tops, or depending on who you are and where you went to school, Kosciuszko's Tops by Rusty Mac. And that sits 2,228 metres above sea level. And it's well worth doing, but not in the winter time when it's covered in snow. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Once again, if you enjoyed the program, drop us an email. Don't forget to write a review on the iTunes website, or leave a comment or a dig at dig.com. The links are on the website. And I look forward to seeing you again for episode 10, getting into our double digits. Until next time, safe geocaching.